This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Children's Theater presenting the world premiere of The Giver, the story of a boy learning of the tragic sacrifices his community has made for safety and security. The Giver runs March 5th, 11th, and 12th, 2 p.m. at Keller Auditorium, 222 Southwest Clay. Tickets at 503-228-9571. Or Ticketmaster.com. Appropriate for ages 10 and up. Information about The Giver at octc.org. Stay tuned for Positively Revolting. well. My goodness. Huh. That was a rather abrupt ending. We'll just have to imagine the applause for Loretta McKenna. That was Marco Polo from a live album. You can just applaud in your mind at home. Yay! Fabulous. Yes. Encore. Bravo. All right. Well, hey, it's really flipping cold out there today and windy. And yes, well, the groundhog saw his shadow, all right. And it's still winter out there in lovely Portland, Oregon. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm your lovely and charming co-hostess, Melody Silverwolf. And I'm joined currently by the lovely and charming Teresa Mitchell.
Morning.
And the lovely and charming Ani Haynes will be here ever so momentarily. And we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff this morning. The world's exploding, and boy, is there a lot of stuff to talk about. But in the meantime, I have an announcement, a related announcement. A very important announcement everyone should hear. The Civil Liberties Defense Center presents Grand Juries, Snitches, and Spies, Oh My. Is this justice? How far can they go? How far have they gone? What do you have to lose? Come to an educational forum on grand juries, criminal prosecution, and the use of confidential informants, presented by attorney Lauren Reagan of the Civil Liberties Defense Center. Learn the facts about the legal system and what rights citizens have in the face of a growing police state that's based on political whim more than a desire for safe communities or justice. Come hear how grand juries and snitches deny your rights, disrupt political movements, and destroy communities. How will current events impact your community? And this is going to be presented a couple of different times and places. The first one is this Saturday at 7 p.m. at Laughing Horse Books. That's at 3652 Southeast Division. And the second time will be next Wednesday, the 22nd at 7 p.m., and that's at Liberty Hall, and that's at 311 North Ivy. So if y'all want to come to that, that's Saturday the 18th at 7 at Laughing Horse Books. Next Wednesday at 7 at Liberty Hall, 311 North Ivy. So that sounds like a really good presentation. And, you know, basically civil rights and civil liberties are like, you know, they're sort of like those ab muscles. You use them or you lose them. And, you know, when you start trying to use something you haven't used for a while, as Teresa does leg lifts, you find it incredibly painful, like, oh, my God, that hurts so bad, and, oh, ow. Well, we don't want to go there with our civil liberties, so, you know, we should use them, because otherwise we definitely will lose them. There is an active campaign afoot in the country to take them away from those who don't make, oh, say, a mil per year or more. So, you know, don't let them, they can't do that without our complicity. And, you know, all the bad things that are happening in our country right now happen only with our cooperation. We shouldn't go along with it. We shouldn't be quiet about it. We should vote against it, and we should fight against it, and we should organize against it, and we should talk to everybody we know against it. And if everyone in the country did that, we wouldn't be in this position. So, you know, resistance is the only solution. So that's what we got to do. And being informed about your rights is the first step. Wouldn't you agree, Teresa?
I would agree, and I remember a recent congressional dialogue in which, perhaps you can fill in the details, the Fourth Amendment was rather forgotten in that by a senator.
Oh, didn't that get erased in the first Bush term? I thought that they took some white out and just covered that up, you know, on the Constitution. Well, my favorite headline of the week is that Karl Rove and Dick Cheney called up all the Republicans on the Senate Intelligence Committee and told them that if they voted for hearings then on the NSA scandal, then they would be blackballed.
Rove was hanging out, making sure people were intimidated
during
the hearings.
That's just outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. And then, of course, the UN has called for the dismantling of Gitmo, which I couldn't agree with more.
Finally.
It's appalling. I am just amazed that the other people in NATO, the other people in the G8 have remained so silent about, well, they haven't remained completely silent. Germany's spoken out about it. France has spoken out about it. But, I mean, they've been remained so silent about basically what amounts to a concentration camp down in Guantanamo. It's an embarrassment to be an American.
I was pleased to see Angela Merkel of Germany come out openly against it. And, yeah, there's just no excuse for it. Guantanamo is sort of no man's land that the U.S. has arrogated off the, eastern coast of Cuba. It's a swamp.
You've actually been, as close as one a civilian can get to Guantanamo, haven't you?
I've looked down on it with a telescope from the Cuban side. And it's a little military base out on a spit of sand. And I remember at the time actually conducting a ritual, hoping that it would sink into the sea.
Well, or that a tornado would, that would be terrible, though. It would drown everyone there, and I don't wish for that. But, servicemen or detainees, either one. But it's just appalling that we are detaining these people. It would be one thing if they'd actually done anything, but most of them haven't. Most of them were unlucky enough to have warlords mad at them, and they were convenient scapegoats, or get rid of some guy who wants to marry your sister and you don't like him, or whatever your beef was with him. They got rid of them by turning them over to the U.S. authorities and saying that they were terrorists.
I'm outraged that that is done in my name, not just because it's illegal, immoral, and pointless, but because it's done in extra legal fashion, and it's another aspect of the incredible arrogance of the Bush administration that they just feel that they're just going to do whatever they want. They don't care about any precedent, any law. When I hear a Bush administration appointee or official talking about rule of law, I just laugh. They don't care about laws.
No, the only law that they respect is the law of gold, you know. And the only golden rule they live by is that he who has the most gold makes the rules. And I mean, I'm just really, but once again, as I started at the show, they do this with our cooperation and complicity. And everybody who's listening to this station, hopefully, does what they can to oppose what the Bush administration is doing. Hopefully you talk to your friends and neighbors and coworkers and family. Hopefully you don't vote for these people. Hopefully you do work in some kind of capacity to further things that are good in the world. Hopefully you contribute to worthy causes if you don't have time to volunteer. And all that we're doing is obviously not enough. More of us have to do it, and the ones who are doing it already have to do more.
You have to recognize that there's a divide and conquer aspect to it, too. You remember the first
Absolutely.
Big terrorism thing was the Portland 7, which was just a joke. It's crowed about now by the right-wingers as if some huge plot was discovered. But when you really look at it, basically all that happened is you had some people who got together, talked about this and that, went out to a shooting range like so many Oregonians do, like I have. And some of them made a trip to, let's see, they made it as far as China or
mm-hmm.
Mongolia.
They were trying to go to Afghanistan the back way, I guess.
Yeah, because of, you know, they had this ideological idea that they should support their Muslim brothers, and then they blew it off. And so for this, they're putting them away for decades. And the underlying thing is, well, that's okay because they're black.
Well,
I mean, that's the one thing that hung over the whole trial. It's like, oh, of course
right. They're
culpable. They're black. And so first they go after the blacks. And now the tree huggers are being made out to be terrorists, even though terrorists kill people in order to terrorize other people. And these white tree huggers haven't killed one person, not even one.
Although their opponents certainly have. David Chain comes to mind.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, even if the Portland 7 had succeeded in going to Afghanistan and joining the Taliban, I'm sorry, I don't mean to disrespect them, but they're kind of laughable. I mean, do we really think that that's... I mean, they're going to defeat America because seven amateur guys from Portland are going to go join the Taliban? I mean, so
but
what?
Still, I mean, I think Teresa's point here is exactly right. That I mean, forgive me, but I was going to say you were sounding like you're winding into a Pastor Niemöller quote. You know, that's what we need
mm-hmm.
to take away
mm-hmm.
here. And that's really the lesson that is staring us in the face. Good morning. This is Ani.
Yes, indeed.
And sorry I'm late, kids. But
no, what I meant by that was that even if they had succeeded in their mission, do we really think that those guys joining the Taliban was worthy of locking them up for the rest of their lives for treason? So what? It's just like really outrageous. It's an overreaction based on them being black and Muslim, which I think is another key. The Muslim part is another key component, which, you know, because we're trying to demonize all Muslims.
Right. There's just, to me, When I was sort of pulling together the confluence of what was up, you know, for on my personal radar screen, with the sort of go ahead passage of the Patriot Act, with as you were mentioning, the new photos coming to light of Abu Ghraib, with the U.S. Administration, of course, denouncing the photos being released. Not necessarily the acts in them, but the photos are compromising, you know, the U.S.'s positions.
Yeah, it's not bad that you beat your wife. It's bad that you told anybody. Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we have those things. That we also, on top of that, then have the U.N. calling for the closure of Gitmo. As you were mentioning, it's time for Gitmo to go. And when you look at all these things together, as well as the domestic surveillance, the spying information that's coming to light, of which actually there was a judge ordering information released. That's something that came out yesterday. Federal judge in the Bush administration ordered a release of documents about warrantless surveillance or spell out what it was not giving up, what it was withholding. So that's, you know, that's kind of encouraging. But what it's reporting on, in fact, is the government is spying and claiming it has the right to do so with impunity. Now, connect the dots. What do all these things mean to you? When seen together and not as an article here and an article there.
Give me an F. Give me an A. Give me an S. Give me a C. Give me an I.
Yeah.
Bushism, I mean, Uber, all this.
Yeah, you know, this is not looking good, people, and we really have to be aware, and we really have to look at solidarity. Really have to look at solidarity. All right, we have callers.
Yes, 503-231-8187
is the number to call should you want to join us on the air. But meanwhile, we will talk to this person. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I liked what you guys were talking about this morning when you said that it, they're doing this in our names.
Yes.
These crimes we are going to be held responsible for in all facets of consciousness and real life right here. You know what I mean? So in the real world that we live in here, which is a facade, but we're being held responsible for the crimes that our government is doing, and we are going to be held karmatically.
I agree.
In the future for these crimes, because the people that are sitting at home complacent are criminals in the fact that they know that it's wrong, they see that it's wrong, they see it's morally wrong, but they sit back and they allow it to do it. And they allow it to happen because I think they're scared.
Well, you know, last night on Air America, they were discussing a fellow made this movie about Enron, and he was being interviewed, and he was discussing some classic experiments that were done that he studied when he was making the film. One of them was Stanley Milgram's experiments with the, you know, the prisoners and with the electric shocks. But another one was one that came out of the horrible murder of Kitty Genovese in New York City many years ago, where she was murdered and beaten to death down the street and screamed repeatedly for help over and over, and nobody helped her, even though people looked out their window and then closed the window.
Oh,
so
yeah.
They did an experiment based on that, where they had these volunteers were in the experiment, and then in another room there was a person that started screaming, and all this smoke started pouring out of the room like the room was on fire. And the other persons in the room with the volunteer were actors, and so they just sat there and did nothing and acted like nothing was happening. And they found that when the other people in the room didn't react and acted like nothing was happening, the volunteers didn't do anything either. But when the other people reacted, then the volunteers jumped up and said, oh yes, we have to help that person get out of that burning room or whatever. So people are so likely to go along with the crowd despite what they know is right or wrong. It's very sad.
Well, that's what the boob tube has done.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of what that drug that has done to the society. They wait for, they're all sheep. They're all waiting for the person to stand up to lead, and then they sit back and they watch. So it's kind of like having this fire coming up on you, and it's coming up on you, and one person gets up, and they all get up, and the one guy runs through the fire, and he goes to safety, but the others is like, oh, no, my leader's gone. What do I do? And it's this is exactly what we're dealing with. And Teresa said one thing that really blows me away as well, eco-terrorism.
That's
what forests ever look like. So We cannot be complacent, because if you're complacent, you are a criminal. That's how I believe.
Well, I can't disagree with that.
Well, thank God. Ladies, I really enjoy your show, and so what if you're 5-10 minutes late? You got some good music segueing into your guys' section. So
we weren't late. I was here at 7:15.
Well, there was somebody on yesterday that complained that you guys were 10 minutes late every Friday. And it's like, you know what? As long as we got five or ten minutes of really good music and maybe some really good information.
Mm-hmm. Well, we voluntarily cede some of our airtime to make room for the community calendar and all those announcements because that's part of, you know, that. Need to know that.
That's what you do.
You just need to know that stuff. Yeah. I mean, and no, we're not late. We schedule that in there, but that's just part of... That's part of the deal.
Well, I thank you so much. You guys got to bundle up and stay warm.
You bet.
But I talked to Gordon Smith, somebody at Gordon Smith, and they said it only takes 5 people to make a phone call about an issue. If it's 5 people other than the 2 people that always call, they
right.
will start moving on.
No,
business.
I'm telling you, really, people say, oh, it doesn't do any good to call and write. Yes, it does.
Well, I used to think, oh, there's probably 2,000 people calling right now,
yes.
but really nobody calls,
it
ever.
It does make a difference.
We must
does.
Stand up for our rights and use our rights to the best of our ability until they're gone, and we must not be complacent. So we love you and take care and
stay
enjoy
warm.
The day. Bye.
Thank you. Right on.
And speaking of other things to do, I mean, I think calling and writing all elected officials, very important.
That's just one step, though.
Writing letters to the editor, very important. Talking to your neighbors and your family and friends, extremely important. And there's a rally in March that's being planned. It's coming up here pretty dang soon now, Sunday, March 19th, just about a month from now. 4 weeks from Sunday, if you want to be sort of more exact. Rally in March, end the war, begin the peace. Here are the demands of the rally and the march. The themes would be bring all the troops home now, no more blood for oil, fund education, healthcare, jobs, and the environment, not war. Military recruiters, get out of the schools. End the occupations of Iraq, Afghanistan, the West Bank, and Gaza. Respect human rights and international law. Stop torture and spying.
Your usual Pommy Pinko agenda, right?
Well, respect human rights, international law, stop torture and spying. Who can't get behind that?
George Bush.
Well, there's him.
Karl Rove,
you
Dick
know,
Cheney.
There's the handful of ruling elite. But really, come on, masses, think about it. Respect human rights, international law, stop torture and spying. It's basic. So that's Sunday, March 19th. It's marking the 3rd anniversary of the invasion of Iraq.
And it's co-sponsored by all the usual suspects. Is there a number where people could call to get involved?
Well,
I'm
actually still giving that information. Waterfront Park is where people are meeting. Gathering at 1:30 p.m. The event begins at 2. So Waterfront Park, that's in downtown Portland, north of the Morrison Bridge at Oak Street. For more information, you can call Peace Justice Works, 503-236-3065, and we will, in fact, be talking much more about that event.
I suspect so.
It's a really good coalition, I must say, of groups, and they're not just the usual suspects, because, in fact, a lot of outreach is being done, and it's really important to coalesce around such basic issues as respecting human rights, international law, and stopping torture and spying, because torture and spying, in fact, affects us all. Human rights affect us all. It's not just for other countries anymore. We really need to pay attention to that stuff. And to that end, I know Melody mentioned it earlier, but I thought it's worth mentioning again that, in fact, tomorrow, Saturday, February 18th, Laughing Horse Books on 37th and Southeast Division, 7 p.m., there is that forum on grand juries, snitches, and spies. The Civil Liberties Defense Committee, Defense Center, I'm sorry, Civil Liberties Defense Center is presenting this forum. It's an educational forum on the grand juries, criminal prosecution, and use of confidential informants. It's being presented by Attorney Lauren Regan of the Civil Liberties Defense Center. So,
and then, of course,
if
again
you
on
want
Wednesday.
More information, you can check it out tomorrow night, Laughing Horse Books, 7 p.m. That's in the southeast side of town. If you are in north or northeast, Wednesday, February 22nd, 7 p.m. at Liberty Hall, 311 North Ivy.
And we've got a caller.
Excellent. And, oh, you know what else?
Oh.
It's that magic time, that time that we let you know where you are and what you're doing. You are, in fact, listening to KBOO. You're right at home here in your very own community radio station. And we are at 90.7 FM Portland.
It's 8 o'clock in the morning. And you're on planet Earth, hopefully, listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio.
503-231-8187. Do join us, won't you? Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is Rhonda from Portland Catholic Worker, the White Feather House. And along with the rally, a group of us are taking our anguish over the war to the next level. We're planning civil disobedience.
Uh-huh.
And we'd invite anyone who's also that set up to join us. If you want more information, the phone number is 503-327-8250. And you can call to get more information. So,
all right.
we need to do something more. We just talked to Senator Wyden's aide yesterday. About five of us went in and gave reasons and for ending the war, of course, from our viewpoint, and asked the aide to convey to him that we would like him to introduce legislation to pull out of Iraq. So there you have it.
Hope
to hear from someone.
All right.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you
Bye.
Very much for calling. Information Clearinghouse, that's us, 503-231-8187.
You know, I do see an opening. I feel like this is a time where we can gather momentum and actually strike back against the Bush fascist juggernaut. Because they're weak on so many fronts right now. I mean, their approval rating, even in the saturated polls, is in the 30s. I mean, and that's, well, I could just leave that where it is, but there's Plamegate, there's Dick Cheney evidently getting drunk, and his story doesn't wash from that bullet pattern. I would guess that he drops that expensive Italian shotgun and blasted his friend that way. And not only that, you know, just from Republican, you know, bogus family values, they were out with women, not their wives.
How about
you know,
that?
Not that I care, but, you know, that's just
it's
more.
It's always a little interesting.
It's just trouble with their groups, you know. And then of course, yeah, there's Abu Ghraib, which is an international horror embarrassment. There's the torture photos that have come out, which are worth looking at, but they are sickening. And, of course, they've got all these people naked just to infuriate Muslims. And I remember one of them's covered in poo.
I'm just amazed that
I do really recommend
this is still going on.
Well, these photos are of things that happened some time ago, apparently. But, you know, I don't believe that they've stopped. We have not addressed the issue in any kind of way except to really get heated about the fact that people are releasing photographs. And to punish the lowest ranking of our armed forces.
Well, we know
that's not credible.
We know from the testimony of Janet Karpinski and other people who were accused at Abu Ghraib that they were ordered to do those things. It wasn't just some rogue low soldiers who like were bored and decided to like you know take some photos for fun. They were told to
unlike
do that.
Unlike the testimony of you know of the prosecutors. During the trials.
And do we believe this? No, we don't.
No, we don't. So, again, time to agitate for justice.
I'm just wondering, I find
and accountability.
Though, how long it's going to be before some other nation or nations just goes, you know what, that's enough. We're just going to, like, bring a multinational force in, and we're going to close it, and you're toast.
What does history show us when there's a rogue nation? You know, I mean, when you leave the only potential as a global response, that's not a pretty thought. We don't want that.
It's called World War II.
We don't want that.
No.
You know, so please, you know, let us demand some accountability. Let us agitate for that accountability because talk is cheap. You know, I mean, and it's important. Like, let's not forget, talk is important. I don't mean to devalue it in any way. But, you know, it's really beyond talking. We have to really organize a pretty massive education and counter-propaganda campaign, because propaganda is what we're getting heaped upon us every day by the shovelful.
But you know,
let's go ahead and take a caller.
Go ahead. I was going to say, as Teresa pointed out, the majority of Americans aren't buying it, but still it goes on, you know.
Well, they're not buying it, but again, they're not necessarily
doing anything,
doing much about it. And you know, so it's at least good that we've gotten to the point of some awakening where people are now going, maybe I shouldn't believe everything I hear. Okay, well, that's cool. That's a good start.
Now let's do something
about it.
Let's
go from there.
Yes.
All right, let's go ahead and take a caller. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
My call is more a question.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, I'm trying to understand why there is not a greater reaction in the American public. And the best conclusion I can draw is that we've been so long swathed in our own self-aggrandizing mythology that to accept the how egregious things are would put upon the average citizen such a burden of guilt, that is, for the complicity in all that's gone on for so long. And everybody acknowledges how much we've disguised our real history as revealed by Howard Zinn. But I'm just wondering, could it be that just as to cross that threshold of acceptance of things being as bad as they are, is that then that puts upon us, mulks upon us, a guilt that many people just don't have the emotional strength to confront?
It may be that partly, and I also think it's partly that people are under such financial pressure. They know that it's all wrong, and they hate it, but they're just struggling to make it, you know, work their two or three jobs, and they don't know what to do.
Well,
if we had some strong
leaders
say, let's do this, they might respond.
That's kind of like the exculpation we make for soldiers, saying that, oh, well, they're just looking for a job. I mean, everybody seems to be dodging responsibility and the guilt, if you will. But I'm also wondering if it isn't something like everybody's familiar with the 6 degrees of separation. And I'm wondering if, you know, about that, you know, contacting 6 people and...
Oh dear. Hello?
What happened there? Sorry
about
that.
Our phone system has an issue. And it apparently has magically reset itself. So it has dumped people. 503-231-8187.
We apologize.
It happens sometimes. And, go phone system. That's what I say. Everyone think good thoughts about the phone system right now. And call on back if you were on hold.
Do you want to respond to that guy?
Yeah. I primarily agree with you, Melody, that, it is a lot about financial stress. People are distracted trying to make ends meet. Of course, I could talk a lot about that in and of itself, because what does it take to make ends meet? There's affluenza occurring. Mm-hmm. And the more people are feeling dissatisfied, alienated, and helpless in their lives, the more tendency there is towards trying to refill yourself through material goods.
Yes.
That's what the campaign ads are all about. Ad campaigns, I suppose I should say.
Well, the campaign ads too.
Have I explained to people that I had a root canal yesterday and my brain is kind of flatlined? I'm misspeaking. It's, you know, I'm sorry.
You're doing pretty well for someone who's flatlined, I must say. It's quite impressive.
I have half my brain tied behind my back. You're just lucky I'm not
is
drooling.
Is that what that funny gray thing is back there?
You're just lucky I'm not drooling anymore. So I think that is a huge part of it. I also think, though, that people cannot escape that culpability. You know, we are citizens in the country that is perpetrating.
I agree.
Mass human rights abuses at home and abroad. And we must speak up about it. We must reprioritize our lives to emphasize, mm-hmm. you know, time to participate in the political process and to actually be, you know, a human being and a citizen beyond being a worker and a consumer.
I do believe, though, that it is partly to do with the fact that people don't know what to do.
I think that is probably really crucial. Here's where I would disagree with you. I don't think we need a couple of strong leaders.
No, I didn't say we need a couple of strong leaders. I think we need people to say, look, let's do this, and people rally around it because they agree with it and do it, you know?
Yeah, we need articulate people to speak a vision.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to really organize in communities. I always have a pretty strong skepticism around developing some leaders, because some leaders, well, first of all, you know, there's a tendency towards vanguardism. Second of all,
what I meant was that I think people need to have the strength to step forward and say, hey, I have an idea, everybody, let's do this. And then if people like it, they gather around that person, they all agree,
people
and they do it.
People need to give forth with their visions.
Yes, because people don't know what to do. So people need to, who have ideas,
yeah,
to speak
up. Talk and organize amongst ourselves.
Yes.
I can think of something to do right away.
What, Teresa?
Well, tell somebody about KBOO Radio, because the value in having an uninterrupted, 70 minutes of dissent is that the thoughts that you're having against fascism can be reinforced and given information. But maybe the most important part is the emotional reinforcement, because as you know, we mentioned earlier, we have all these people who are opposed to the Bush administration, but nobody is moving. That's not really true. It just seems that way. But to move, you have to feel that you have other people, and you mentioned this too, Melody. It's human nature. You have to feel like other people are going to be joining you.
Yes.
And when you listen to KBOO, you know, you just tune into KBOO, you start getting that true feeling. I mean, the fact is, Americans don't want to be fascist.
No.
I mean, when you really put it on a point and explain what's actually happening and prove it to people, and you can take anyone, and if they will give you enough time, and if you can have a calm enough dialogue with that person, you can show them this country has gone absolutely full-blown imperial corporate fascist, which is, I realize, a redundant phrase. But KBOO is very effective in that regard. And if you would just tell somebody about KBOO.
That's always a good
And don't
point.
Hide your light under a bushel. If you have ideas for little things, like even if it's just to get your neighbors together and stand on the street corner every Tuesday night with signs that say, you know, we want peace in Iraq, do it. I mean, just little things like that have a way of beginning to grow.
Even if it's just getting your neighbors together and discussing the situation in Iraq. And, you know, I mean, it's important. It's important to talk with each other and to participate in community education now.
Yes.
And good morning to our fellow that got dropped earlier by our bad phone system.
Yeah, am I on?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay, thanks. Yeah, I just wanted to say a couple of things. I'm a baby boomer, and there's a lot of talk, you know, within our age group of what to do, what can we do.
Uh-huh.
A lot of us lived through the Vietnam fiasco.
Yes.
And we're seeing the very same thing. And there's a lot of power in the older people. The baby boomers have a lot more power than they think they have. And a lot of baby boomers are not afraid of losing their jobs or losing their houses or, you know.
Because they already did, no.
if they haven't already got it, they're not too worried about it. And the ones that do have it aren't worried about losing it. So I think we've got to rise up, and I think the baby boomers really need to listen. Rise up. Somebody has got to get out there.
I agree.
Put it together. Somebody will rise to the top here.
Well, Cindy Sheehan's doing that right now.
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, Cindy Sheehan is an amazing. We need more Cindy Sheehan.
I agree.
Okay? And somebody will rise to the top that we can trust, and this thing will turn around. It is going to turn around.
Right, but it only through collective and concerted action.
I agree.
I think what's going to help it turn around also is when all of these people that have been buying these homes with these phony loans, these goofy little loans that they've been giving people, when they begin to have to pay the piper for those, I think there's going to be a mass uproar.
Well, for the first time in America's history, we have the average American has a negative savings. I mean, that's not good. People are in debt to their eyeballs.
Yeah,
and especially considering the fact that China controls so much of our economy through buying our debt. I mean, everyone who has a lick of sense about national and international economies has been warning us for years that we're headed for a huge collapse, and
I think they call it a readjustment.
Yeah, a readjustment. I call it a huge collapse. You know, when hundreds of thousands or millions of people lose their homes or their pensions or everything they've got, that's going to be. You're right, though. I mean, it's kind of it's to the point now where you can't just sit by idly and wait for retirement. You got to get up and do something about it.
Well, one thing I want to say, I was in China a month and a half ago. And I happened to be there at the time that they were having the big Asian summit.
Mm-hmm.
And on the TVs in the United States, you didn't see this, but I saw it on TV in Shanghai. You know, in China, where they place you in a photograph or where they place you at the dinner table is all important. And they were taking a group shot of all of the big wheels around the world. You know where they had our president?
No.
They had our president to the left in the back row, three or four people down.
Hmm. Yeah, obviously not a place of importance.
That's right. You know what he was doing?
What?
He was biting his lower lip. You know how he does.
Why am I not surprised?
He was looking down at the ground. He was shifting from foot to foot. This was all on TV in China. He was shifting from foot to foot, and he was obviously angry.
Well, and that's the time when he tried to go out the locked door, too. That was hilarious.
And then, in the newspaper in Shanghai, here was the advice Bush gave the Chinese people. He said to them, you need to start spending your money. Okay, because the Chinese people don't buy everything on credit.
Right.
I was in China.
So he's trying to import American values.
Exactly. That's what he was trying to say. Just like you said after 9/11,
right.
Go shopping.
Right. Right.
You know,
shopping is patriotism.
Yes, so. Well.
All right. Hey, thank you so much for your call.
You betcha.
Well, you know, our last truly elected president, that would be Al Gore, actually said in a speech at one point that free trade was the same as democracy. So it's not just the Republicans who pushed that meme. It's unfortunate.
No, I have to give that because as we recall, the neoliberalist globalization agenda moved forward rapidly
under
Clinton.
It sure did. He was the best Republican president we ever had.
Yeah, and. Okay, well, moving on. 503-231-8187. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello? Hello, caller.
This is LJ. I'm not just an ordinary caller.
No,
it's you, LJ.
We would never claim that you were ordinary, LJ.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, well, this conversation is getting really deep this morning. And I figured that for your amusement and for your and to add a little levity to the conversation, I'm going to read a little a paragraph that I took out of a magazine called The Week, dated February 17th of 2006. Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
Okay. A soldier wounded by a roadside bomb in Iraq was last week forced to pay for his body armor, which was discarded because it was covered in blood. William Rebrook, 25, told Army officials in Fort Hood, Texas, that the last time he saw the armor, it was being peeled off his twitching body. But the Army said it had no record of that. And Rebrook had to borrow $700 from friends. It was like, thank you for your service. Now here's a bill for $700, said Rebrook.
He forgot to bill him
however,
for his arm that got blown
some
off.
Some of the people on national radio did take up a huge collection and got thousands of dollars to reimburse them.
Hardly the point.
I know, hardly the point.
Who, by the way, lost the use of his right arm.
Right.
So any potential people that are going to go sign up for the draft, you better have some money in your bank account in case something happens.
That's
to you.
Right. Well, a lot of the soldiers actually have to. They don't give them body armor, so they've been buying it. Okay, their parents send it to them or whatever. But then what happens is that if you're wearing that,
eBay
gets better than that. Let's imagine that Joe is in Iraq and he doesn't have the armor, so his parents take up a collection, they send him the armor. Great, so now Joe has his armor.
Okay, how absurd is that at the face?
Yes, at the first, that's the starters. But then Joe gets injured, okay? And so he has, you know, his body armor protects him for the most part, but he gets, you know, some injuries, some shrapnel, or maybe he gets an arm damage or leg damage.
Mm-hmm.
So when he goes to the hospital, the government doesn't want to use, they want to charge him for his treatment instead of giving it to him for free because he wasn't wearing U.S. Army issued body armor.
Ooh.
But they didn't give it.
I
mean, beyond outrageous.
That's funny.
We need to have a new word for how outrageous this is.
The operative word for many a year has been Catch-22.
Wait. But the other side of it is they could send truckloads full of $100 bills so-called contractors in Iraq who are pissing it away.
Are we up to, what, $12 billion that's gone missing over there now?
So there's $12 billion missing, and you're going to charge a guy who put his life on the line to protect this country, and you're going to charge him $700. Oh, and by the way, we're very, very sorry that you had to lose your right arm.
Right. And can you imagine if you were in charge of, worked in a company as the controller or the CEO of any company anywhere in the developed world, and you lost or misplaced $12 billion, and at the annual meeting you go, well, you know, we're $12 billion short, and I just don't know where it is, guys. Do you think that they let you keep your job?
Yeah, try that as a plaid pantry night clerk.
I don't think so.
No kidding. And the caveat is that Mr. Bush and his friends are trying to sell democracy, our kind of democracy, all over the world, and holding it up as some kind of paradigm. Excuse me?
Yeah, we're stretching definitions beyond recognition.
Yeah, well, really. Okay, well, I'm glad I lightened the mood.
Okay, thanks for calling.
I'd like to point out that it's not a mistake. It's perfectly consistent with elite corporate that the soldiers are also the enemy. They are as one Republican recently said, the mythical little guy, and they're being sent off to shoot up some other mythical little guys. And the function of all of these people is for their labor to be extracted and the wealth be directed to a very tiny corporate elite. And so for the corporate elite who are running the country at this point, both groups are enemies, the soldiers and the people that they're fighting.
That's right. Well, let's cast our minds back to a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, when I pointed out that the disparity among the rich and the poor in this country has grown so dramatic that we are now in the relative positions that serfs and the aristocracy were during feudal times. We are literally back before the Middle Ages. We are literally in the feudal era again. And, you know, our science is rushing to catch up with that, too. Yes. If you look at the game of chess originated during that time, and it perfectly illustrates what Teresa's talking about. We have the king and the queen and the knights and the rooks, and then we have the pawns. And the pawns are just, as anyone who's ever played chess knows, are just totally expendable. You know, they're out there. They're in the front. They're the ones who get, you know, killed off first, so that you can protect your really, quote-unquote, really important pieces, like the ones that aren't the pawns. It's just like a little bit too ironic for me. I'm sort of suffering from irony overload.
Irony overload?
Yes. 503-231-8187.
And good morning to you. You're on the...
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning.
I'll turn my radio off here. Okay. Hey, there you guys go again, bashing corporations. If you're so against corporations, why don't you start one yourself? I mean, I did 18 years ago.
And?
And, you know, today I employ 15 to 20 people, depends on the season, and I treat them good, and...
And do you act like Enron and Halliburton?
I'm not a pawn in this big chess game. I make a lot of money.
I never said that all corporations were bad. Where did you get that idea?
You guys bash corporations all the time.
Wait a minute. I have never said ever that all corporations were alike. If you don't behave like Halliburton or Enron, then good for you.
Okay, two corporations, okay?
Well, that they're not the only ones. They're perfect illustrations. But small businesses generally don't behave like Halliburton and Enron and are generally not the problem.
And if you've been a longtime listener of the show, then you'll probably know that Melody and I do support sustainable business model. Because, in fact, economic enterprise is important, as long as it is done in a non-exploitative manner.
Doesn't sound like you're exploiting anyone, so good for you.
Well, we haven't actually heard if you're exploiting anyone.
80% of the jobs in Oregon in most states, and they're not the ones that we're talking about. Unrestrained corporate power without any kind of sense or oversight is what we're talking about, not small corporations who are trying to, like, you know, run
a
business.
So my question for you, sir, is how do you feel? Are you finding any connections, any dots? You hung up?
He didn't want to hear what we had to say and didn't want to respond. How about that?
I had a question for him.
I think he just wanted to lob a snowball with a rock in it and then run away.
Yeah, because in fact, as Melody points out, we've never said all corporations are evil.
No, I love it when this guy calls because it really gets the conversation going.
Well, let's talk to another caller.
Not when he leaves.
Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It seems like business is actually probably one of the best solutions we have for an answer right now, given the popularity of organic foods and all sorts of sustainable movements, and people are really finding their voice through their spending right now.
So, as long as those kind of things don't get corrupted, there's been quite the move since the big chains are starting to sell organic food. There's been quite the move to dumb down the organic requirements and all that. As long as we can hold the line on that, I totally agree with you.
Well, we've got to go with what we have, and it seems like there's always a possibility for any outcome, so we need to move forward in a positive light. And I, being really young, I'm 22, and there's not a lot of people my age that I feel are really engaged in the political scene right now, and I feel that's because the people that we look up to, our parents, the baby boomers, the people that are calling in your show, have already been through this before, and instead of talking about all the things that they've been through and all the injustices and how they've been able to overcome it themselves and get to the point where they are now, they feel pretty down and out and in debt. And if we can come together and cross generations, I think it'd do a lot to energize the movement and really get our leaders out on the forefront and realize there's a huge contingent of peace advocates behind them that are ready to get these corrupt powers out of the system.
Good. Well, were you listening earlier when that guy called in and told about the young man who rode his bicycle from Wisconsin out to the Redwoods and is now sitting in a tree protecting it? He's very young as well. I think there's a lot of young people doing some really, really amazing, wonderful things in the movement. And so I totally respect their contribution. Everybody is needed. Everybody from 5-year-olds to 95-year-olds.
And I would encourage all the disenfranchised people to recognize that there's still value to our democracy and that engaging in the democracy is just as important as people sitting in the trees protecting the trees.
Absolutely. There's many, many facets of the struggle and of the movement for social justice, and social justice to me automatically includes, you know, environmental justice.
You
can't have one without the other. So, all actions, you know, towards a positive change to bring about more peace, more justice, more human rights, you know, need to be supported. Well, we can't really bicker about tactics at this point.
That's right. Without an environment, society is not going to exist. Let's face it. Sort of necessary. You're so right, though. You know, and everybody's stories are important. And if it inspires people who are younger to hear the stories of older people, it inspires me to hear some of the things that younger people are doing as well. I mean, I think we all have a lot to learn from one another.
And just one last thought would be, you know, these trade regulations and international laws are always trumping ecology and humanity right now, and I think we really need to recognize humanity and ecology as the precursor to any kind of commerce or opportunity to exploit others, and we really need to respect each other and the environment.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Thanks for your call.
All right, have a great day.
You too.
It's about 8:27 in the morning, and you're listening to KBOO Community Radio. This is Positively Revolting. We're sort of all over the place this morning discussing the headlines, what's going on in the world, and we'll be here until 9 o'clock, and you can call us, 503-231-8187.
I'd actually like to put forward the concept that we're not all over the map, actually, because as I said, all these things are interconnected, and they interconnect in a way that paints a very, very, shall we say, draconian. Yeah, that's the word, draconian picture, because really when you look at the fact that we have detention camps that torture people, holding them for years without trial. We call it Guantanamo Bay. We have others around the world. When we have photos coming out that document incredible abuse of prisoners, someone want to describe that picture? I don't know. Words are failing me. There's an article
horrible.
In the San Francisco Chronicle, I believe, San Francisco Gate Chronicle.
Looks like someone is, like, there's a cot on top of him and a cot under him, and they're wrapped together, and he's squeezed in this between these two cots with a blindfold on. It's horrible. Right? I don't even know what
that
is.
Oh, that's one of the nice pictures. The ones I saw showed bloody sexual violations and crap all over one guy who's being held naked before the camera.
Unbelievable.
So when we have detention centers, and we have torture, and we have an administration denying culpability and or claiming the right, depending on who's asking them and on what day and in what way, and you have that same administration that's either denying culpability or claiming the right, doing exactly the same thing around spying on domestic activists and really people, you know, they call them terrorists. We know better, right? We know better. That, all in all,
well, I'm just
that
waiting,
ain't looking good.
I'm just waiting for anybody who isn't a neocon Republican to be called a terrorist. I mean, that's basically where we're headed.
That
if
is
you're
where
not,
we're headed.
If you're not a friend of Dick Cheney's and Karl Rove's, then you're a terrorist.
I believe Bush said it all early on after 9/11. If you're not with us, you're against us.
And that's so true.
And as our engineering pixie points out, it's a little dangerous at this time to even be a friend to Dick Cheney.
That's right.
You know, for God's sakes, don't go hanging
with the
man.
Cheney's got a gun, as they say.
Let's go ahead and take another call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi,
hello?
Good morning.
Yeah, you know, you guys talk about George Bush. You know, I'm baby boomer, too. And the reason why most of the Vietnam vets don't get involved is because of the way that they came home from the war.
Uh-huh.
And so they figure that, you know, they don't care.
You know, that's not my experience of the vets that I know that they don't care.
Well,
really not my experience.
Most of the vets that I know that are inwards, they don't want anything to do with much of anything anymore.
Yeah, that's actually true for a lot of vets.
Because, you know,
it's true.
When Reagan was
for a lot of other vets, it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's a lot of vets out there that came home clean, and a lot of people respected them in their hometowns, and they were treated with respect. But there's a lot of veterans that I know that are inverted. They don't really want to be involved in anything because they don't want to be accused of something that they may do.
Well, they were permanently damaged by Vietnam, and we did less than nothing to help them when they got home.
But then we have our kids that are over there in Iraq, which I think is a false war.
Uh-huh.
And it was every war that's ever been fought since about, I'd say, Dwight D. Eisenhower has been fought over oil.
Uh-huh.
Or rubber. In Vietnam, it was rubber and opium and
oil. It is
oil.
It's all about resources. You're right.
Yeah, and I don't understand why we have to send our troops overseas when their main concern should be to protect the homeland.
Well, because, you know, just like little children, little two-year-olds fighting over toys, what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine, too. And if you have this, like, three-year-old mentality about, well, I want it and I have a bigger stick than you so I can get it and it's mine, whap, whap. I mean, basically, you know, we're just out of control, greedy little children. And, you know, nobody on the globe has seen fit to stop us.
Well, let's define we and let's actually look at how that is driven. I mean, I mentioned it earlier. We live in a society gripped with affluenza, and we hope to be doing a show soon really about that specifically, you know, so that, in fact, the U.S. uses far more resources per capita, 6 times the resources of the average European.
That's right.
And God knows. I mean, you know, really just really a whole lot more than
our
non-Europeans.
Share. Yes.
You know,
a whole lot more than our share of resources. And so to satisfy that quote-unquote need, which obviously is not a human need.
No.
You know, this is a manufactured need. Then we justify imperialist war to take resources to feed that need.
But, you know, I think that if the average American really realized, if you said, well, if you buy this, whatever it is, then this person right here, hold up picture or show little video, this person, see them suffering, that's what's happening because you're buying this thing. And I don't think
that's
the average
the consciousness
person would
we need
do
to
it
get to.
If they could really see what the consequences of their decisions were, but I think
sight,
that we
out
go
of
out of
mind.
Our way to conceal that from ourselves, so
right.
We don't have to know. We don't
yeah, caller, you're
it.
Absolutely right. Out of sight, out of mind.
Yep.
We try to.
But there was one thing, and not to change the subject.
No, go ahead.
About 2 months ago, or maybe 3 months ago, that there was three lab rats escaped from some clinic. They had it on television.
Hmm.
And these rats carried a viral infection. I think it was either anthrax or it was one of the others. I've never heard any more about these three rats that supposedly got out of this lab.
Hmm.
Now, if you let that kind of stuff out into the community and you don't really pay any attention and you're not following it, you know, what happens if it's somewhere in New England, because it was back in the East somewhere, that somewhere in New England you had an outbreak of scurvy or something because nobody followed up on these three rats that escaped from this clinic?
Well, that's very disturbing. I didn't hear about this. I don't know exactly
what
they had.
It was on a major news. It was like Channel 2 or Channel 6. I can't remember. But they only made it was like a passing statement.
It would depend, I think, on what they had, if it would just affect other rats and kill them, or if it could actually spread to other animals and humans. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard about that at all.
But when you start fooling around with things like that, even when you start fooling around with things like, you know, breeding different varieties of grass seed or trees or whatever, if those escape into the environment, sometimes they do unexpected damage that the person didn't think it through. And I think that's why you have to be super careful about that kind of thing.
But the thing about, you know, like, I don't understand why George Bush isn't in front of the Senate right now being prosecuted for crimes.
You don't, because, well, look at what happened this week, that Karl Rove and Dick Cheney called up all the senators who were Republicans on the Intelligence Committee and said, if you vote to have hearings on this, the NSA scandal, then we're going to blackball you. We're going to make sure you have no money and no support for your reelection campaign, and we're basically, you know, you're going to be toast.
Yeah, but isn't that a crime?
Of course it is.
Well,
then
it all brings up
why we pay these people to be lawyers and judges that aren't seeing. I mean, you know, in Oregon, we had the Right to Die Act.
That's right.
We all voted that in the first time, and I mean, it was a majority. And some, pardon my expression, some a-hole over in Vancouver, a judge or something, said he thought that was wrong. And so that was tied up in litigation in courts for another 3 years. It finally got to the courts in Washington, and they said leave it up to the states. I mean, we pay these people billions of dollars to tell us that they're doing absolutely nothing.
Well, that's true, and it's time to de-elect some of them, and I think that may be happening in the fall.
I think they ought to get that electoral vote. I think that crap should be thrown out, and it should be a paper vote, and it should be counted by every person. I mean,
counted. That would be nice.
No more electorals, because I think that's crap.
Well, even that, our main concern with the voting, I think, is that we need to be sure that we don't use these electronic voting machines with no paper trail.
Yeah, because
that's
we don't know. We don't know if when you push a button for Al Gore, it's going over to George Bush.
That's right. And so without those, we can't. No hope of having any kind of democracy.
That's not what the Constitution wants.
Right. Free and fair elections in the U.S. That's a goal.
One man, one vote. I believe that they ought to get rid of electoral, and every vote should count.
Right.
Paper.
Hey,
all account.
Thanks very much for your call this morning.
Uh-huh.
We have some other folks waiting we're going to give a chance to.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize that originally you didn't vote directly for senators. Our people did not vote for them. They were voted on, by the legislatures, I believe. And then that was changed to be direct vote at some point. So the Electoral College is another artifact that I think it worked great in 1776, but that was a different world, and I think that's a whole, you know, it's a whole new world, and we need to rethink that. But first we need to get rid of electronic voting machines.
But I wanted to get to the point the caller raised about, you know, what directs us towards wars, and you mentioned that we've got this affluenza, but I see that as reactive. And when it comes to the directive force, you know, that caused the United States Armed Forces to be sent into Vietnam to extract, you know, oil, tin, rubber, rice,
opium.
Or to be sent, or to be sent to Iraq to steal oil. It's not democratic impulse at all. It's not the majority of the American people, or even a significant fraction of the American people saying, "Oh, well, we want this, and we expect you to go get it." It's the CEO class of General Electric, Raytheon, mm-hmm. Martin Marietta, Halliburton, who are pulling the strings, and it's not a conspiracy theory, because they are the people who have the power to make or break the politicians by giving them the money that they take to the television stations to do complex and powerful psychological campaigns to get us to vote for whoever Halliburton and General mm-hmm. Electric want us to vote for. And I guess the point I'm getting around to is, when it comes to wars, it ain't our idea.
It's greed and power over that drives these people.
We're being made complicit with it. I mean, one... One aspect of the oil thing is that we act like that's necessary for our gas commuting. But we have to have gas, we have to have cars, we have to have commute because there was a conscious decision made in the 20s by, let's see, Standard Oil and who were the other conspirators who were actually convicted in court to go around, tear up the rail lines, encourage people to go out to suburbs where they would have to get cars to commute. And this is all decided way outside any democratic forum. This is elite rule, and we've been under elite rule for a long time, and we have to cop to that before we can change it.
And even now under our current system, if we had someone in the White House who was serious about conservation, if we really did serious conservation, like why do you drive down the street at 4 in the morning and all the businesses' lights are on? That's stupid. You know, if we were really serious about conserving and we told every business that we'll give you a tax break if you allow the maximum percentage of your employees possible to telecommute and do things like that, we could wean ourselves of dependence on the vast majority of our oil imports right now. But we don't want to because rich people are getting richer on it. You know,
I have to agree. It is time for some creative solution to these situations.
But you know, we're not looking for any because, you know.
Let's go ahead and give another caller a chance. Good morning. You're on the air.
Excuse me.
Hi.
Good morning. You ladies are refreshing this morning. But you always are.
Oh, well, thanks. Well,
thanks.
And I'm calling because I think that our people here in the United States have failed to recognize that they have been fed propaganda all their life. I have lived under propaganda. And it just goes from one thing to another to put you in fear. And a good example is Abu Ghraib, you know, all that abuse over there. Well, it was perfected here in the prisons.
Yeah, that's
right.
We have the prison system set up to incubate AIDS.
Yeah.
You know, if they're going to take people off the street, at least they should make them safe.
Yeah.
You know, and so we can just go on and on. Oh, the gang members way back when didn't want no job because the job went overseas. Those people wanted a job. That was all they had. They gave them drugs to sell, and that's what they sold. But they cannot follow the drug money. You know, it's too hard. It's all of these.
Well, they don't like where it leads, ultimately, you know.
Well, they just don't rain down in our community. And so we get more officers, and we get more sound bites. And for some reason, we can't educate ourselves enough to look at the truth. And the few people that will look at the truth will not come forward because of fear, a lot of them. And some people will stand up. And so I have been trying to coordinate women in the NAACP win going on 2 years now. And a good example of what is wrong with us is that we have the people that will not come forth because of infighting. What's infighting? It's about one vote. You know, we take these sound bites and we carry them too far. We need, like the NAACP doesn't belong to an elected president. It's up to the community to come in and straighten it out. But it's those sound bites. You know what I'm saying? And so now we had Katrina. And we brought people here from Katrina that could find jobs. But what about the 3,500 men that went to straighten their record out? How come they didn't have first jobs or jobs? Why were jobs available?
Well, the whole Katrina thing is just one giant disaster after another. I mean, every single thing that has happened since the hurricane hit has just been awful. I mean, there's people still homeless. There's people still. A friend of mine who lives in New Orleans said that in her neighborhood just 2 days ago they found a couple of dead bodies that they hadn't even, apparently they never even searched the neighborhood. And
right.
Oh, it's just horrible. I mean, there's always people. They don't even. There's still kids missing that they don't know where they are. They don't know where their parents are. People are getting totally screwed over by insurance companies. My friend, who's fairly well-to-do compared to a lot of the survivors of Katrina. Unfortunately for her, she owned two houses at the moment the hurricane hit because she had just bought the other one and hadn't sold the first one yet. and she lost her shirt on both of them. Her apartment got flooded, and now she was staying in a hotel, and now she's living in a trailer, which she had to practically strangle the FEMA guy to get and threaten all kinds of legal action. And she has money, and her husband's an attorney. Just imagine what people who are poor and uneducated, the kind of runaround they're getting.
Right.
And there's just... it's just a disaster, and the whole state of Louisiana is still a disaster. And
right.
I'm
from Louisiana.
It's horrible.
But see, that was just a wake-up call.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had people that did not face the facts of how we've been living here in the United States all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And some people said, oh, there's no racism, there's no black this, there's not that. But we still are living in this situation because someone... the system refused to change to provide people's needs.
Well,
you know, we don't deal with psychology 101.
Well, then what is the system for if it doesn't provide for people's needs?
Right.
Why do we even have a government or a society if it doesn't further our human needs?
Figure out what's the difference in our system and mafia communism.
Well, there isn't any. I think the mafia has more honor than the Bush crime family.
And I think people just need to stand up, step forth and say, well, we don't see it this way, and it's our law, our rights, our constitution. But that is so hard to get people to do that.
Yeah.
It's a big fight.
And I can't agree with you more.
Thank you, ladies.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you so much for calling.
Okay. Good morning.
Well, here, let me tell y'all what's coming up. The fabulous Marlena is going to be here at 9 with her electronic salon, and she'll speak with Ed Goldberg about politics and culture. And they'll both speak with national security specialist James Bamford, who is the author of A Pretext for War, 9/11, Iraq, and the Abuse of America's Intelligence Agencies. He's quite the authority on the subject. She'll also present a program from Dave Emery on the reissuing of classic political books on the Internet. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, a look at the Australian report that broke the story of more photographs and videos of Iraqi detainees being tortured inside Abu Ghraib. And a Professor Alfred McCoy will talk about his book, A Question of Torture, which is a startling expose of the CIA development of psychological torture from the Cold War to Abu Ghraib.
I was really pleased to see that he had written that book on torture because he's a very meticulous researcher and he's very much respected since he wrote The Politics of Heroin.
Well, I think that he and James Bamford are both very respected, and they are both, appalled is probably an understatement at what's going on. And, you know, all kinds of people are coming out of the intelligence community woodwork and being very vocal in their outrage against the Bush administration. I think that's remarkable. You just don't see that happen very often.
With that as a backdrop, I really have to wonder about this. The Patriot Act is up for its final approval, you know, so it can become a reality in our lives for a whole long time.
You know what to do about that.
Ever.
Call and write, write and call.
That is so, at this point, Pollyanna. I don't really have any other suggestion, but what I'm about to say is, you know, Feingold, Russ Feingold, U.S. Senator, he was talking about filibustering. He's been the loudest voice against the Patriot Act for I think he was the one no vote on
it
in the first place. So he's done his work, but he's one voice. And, he has this wonderful speech prepared for delivery. I found it on Common Dreams. I'm sure you can find it in many places.
Is this a speech he's planning to filibuster with?
No, it's a speech he actually gave yesterday.
Ah.
And you know what? He got no support. None. It's pretty much a done deal, according to Specter, that there's really no opposition to the new amendments that have been added to safeguard people's privacy
rights. I feel so much safer now, don't you?
Well, I want to read actually from Feingold's speech. He says, that said, and this is up for a vote, they are aiming it for about March 10th, okay? So, got a couple weeks to try to convince somebody to make some sense. But, man, I am a little disheartened about this, especially in light of the fact that this is coming out in the same time that all of the NSA, crap is coming out with judges ordering the Bush administration to release documents about the warrantless surveillance program, with the administration being in hot water about the fact that even with their increased rights, in heavy quotes, to surveil, they're still exceeding those boundaries.
Well, I think it's something in the air conditioning of the Senate chambers that makes you be in denial, you know?
We're going to trust them then to behave with a permanent Patriot Act.
I wouldn't trust George Bush to throw away a piece of paper in the
trash
can.
Allow me to quote from this. Feingold says that it's hard for me to understand how senators who blocked the conference report in December can now say that it's such a great deal. It's not a great deal. The conference report is just as flawed as it was 2 months ago. No amount of cosmetics is going to make this beast look any prettier. That said, let me walk through some of the provisions of the conference report that are being touted as improvements to the original Patriot Act. First, he said, there's the issue that what was the linchpin in the bill that the Senate passed without objection in July last year, the standard for obtaining business records under Section 215. 215 gives the government extremely broad powers to secretly obtain people's business records. The Senate bill would have required that the government prove to a judge that the records it sought had some link to suspected terrorists or spies or their activities. The conference report does not include this requirement. Now the conference report does contain some improvements to 215, at least around the edges. It contains minimization requirements, meaning that the executive branch has to set rules for whether and how to retain and share information about U.S. citizens and permanent residents obtained from the records. It requires clearance from a senior FBI official before government can seek to obtain particularly sensitive records like library, gun, and medical records. But the core issue with 215 is the standard for obtaining these records in the first place. Neither the minimization procedures nor the high-level sign-off changes the fact that the government can still obtain sensitive business records of innocent, law-abiding Americans. The standard in the conference report, relevance, quote-unquote, will still allow government fishing expeditions. This is unacceptable, and the Sununu bill does not change that. The Sununu bill is being touted as this great compromise to improve and make the Patriot Act safer.
But
yeah,
relevance
right.
is so last century, you know.
It's incredible. It must be stopped. I don't have a whole lot of hope of stopping it. But call, agitate, do what you can. The Patriot Act, very bad.
Yes.
The compromise bills, not making it much better. Still very bad. The fact that Feingold seems to be the only voice here is frightening.
The American voter, they think all that the voter is good for is marking a box. No, I got more hope. I think the American voter can write the name of who they're voting for. That's what we're asking them. Write the name of who you're voting for.
Very cool. Thanks very much for that.
I'm going to throw cold water on that. I'm sorry. It's like to get the debate past candidate A versus candidate B, you have to have access to media.
Oh, no, the internet. Forget the media.
Well, people aren't forgetting the media. They're home and watching their TVs every day, and they see those commercials.
As the fire starts, as the enthusiasm starts to spread, the people, and you don't have to convince everybody, just the half of the Americans who vote. So you can reject half the people, anyway, let them continue to watch their TV. They're not going to vote anyway.
Well, I'm of the opinion.
I know about that.
We need them for mass action.
We need them to wake up and get off their duffs and vote.
Yeah, we do, but we can't get to them because they're stuck on the media.
I think we can get to them a lot of ways by talking to them at the bus stops, at the lunch counter, you know, everywhere you meet people.
Yes. And I don't know how the names are going to appear that everybody's going to write in. But I know that if it gets started talking, leaders will appear in each district.
All right. Well, hey, thanks very much for your call. I want to let someone
else
have a chance.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I don't think we should write off our Congress critters just yet, though. I actually think Blumenauer and Wu and DeFazio especially are doing a fairly okay job.
If I'm not mistaken, the fella was actually, I'd argue with you, but I believe the fella was actually saying if you wrote them in, it would ensure accounting. Because, you know, you can't just auto-scan those. Okay, well, let's go ahead, take a call. and try to squeeze you in here. We have 4 minutes left. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I've been all for abolishing the Electoral College, but also I think more importantly is this is a perfect example of what we've seen over the last 4 years or 5 years is to abolish the executive branch altogether, to have just local governments and a Congress, House and Senate, and no more of this going to war on lies and, you know, and having to kill 3,000 people to keep his job.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to take time, but eventually that's something we definitely have to do. We can no longer have an executive branch that just elects these people and have a Justice Department that's there for his own personal lawyer.
I would totally support further discussion on that.
And I would like to ask Teresa, there's this great article about a close informant and friend, FBI agent John O'Neill, that, you know, was killed on 9/11. I got this on rents.com on August 18th of 05, and it talks about, it's about 8 pages long, and it reads like an excellent spy novel.
Mm-hmm.
But she was an informant for John O'Neill. And John O'Neill protected her, but there was 19 others. It doesn't say if it was before or during or shortly after 9/11, but there was 19 others that were Al-Qaeda informants that were all brutally murdered. I don't know if it was before or after 9/11, but they were all working with John O'Neill's little cabinet.
And I thought it was real convenient that John O'Neill.
I was going to say, O'Neill, of course, was the head of FBI surveillance. Was it? He had been really trying to.
He was
draw
on the
attention.
Tail of the 9/11 hijackers.
He was really trying to draw attention to what was going on in mm-hmm. that sort of milieu. He had recently. Became the head of security for the World Trade Center,
and it was hired by George Bush's cousin.
And I believe it was his second day on the job.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
When, in fact, he was killed in the line of his
work. It wouldn't surprise me if he was actually tied to a chair.
Well, that could have been a coinky-dink, but it sure does seem awfully
coinky-dinkle,
doesn't it? I just really wondered about that.
No,
it's another convenient opportunity for the Bush administration. This executive branch has gotten away with way too much.
Oh, yeah.
It was a right.
And it just makes me sick time and time again to get away with so much. And these hearings are crucial. I think the ones on the spying, and hopefully those Republicans will stand our ground.
We're out of time.
All right. Well, thank you
very much.
So much for your call this morning.
Yes, indeed. And we are out of time. And thanks to everyone who called today. And you know, I think that the message I want to leave people with today is, don't just roll up in a ball and be fetal. You know, this is the time, you know, I feel like they say in the Marines commercial, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. This is no time to go fetal. This
I would
is
like
the time,
never to think about military recruiting
This is the time to, like, you know, redouble our efforts.
We can roll them back and they will be surprised.
Remember tomorrow, Laughing Horse Books on 37th and Division, 7 p.m., educational forum sponsored by the Civil Liberties Defense Center, Grand Jury Snitches and Spies, Oh My. Learn about the grand jury system, learn about criminal prosecution, and the use of confidential informants. Very important educational piece. Also, March 19th, Sunday, Waterfront Park, gather 1:30 p.m. It's the third anniversary of the invasion. It's a call to respect human rights and international law. Stop torture and spying. Bring the troops home now. No more blood for oil, and so much more. Thanks so much for listening.
See you next week.
Do continue to be positively revolting.